Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by RacePlace.com, Ceramic Speed, RunCatalina.com. You can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville. With Father's Day right around the corner, what could be better than having on one of our favorite dads on the planet, Mr. Alex Smith? Alex, how the heck are you?
Hi, Bob. I'm not too bad, thank you. I'm not too bad. I've just about recovered from the escapades of last weekend.
So let's go back a little bit. You guys have a child. You have Harrison. And talk a little bit about finding out that something was wrong with Harrison.
Yeah, so about 4 years ago now, yeah. He was falling over a lot. He wouldn't save himself when he fell, and you know, when he got up off the floor, he'd kind of lever himself up like an old man. And we knew something was up, but it just took us a long time of seeing consultants and pediatricians to try and work it out. And then January of 2011, we got told by our pediatrician that Harrison had something called Duchenne muscular dystrophy, which is it's a fatal muscle wasting condition. And the chap said to us, take him home, look after him, give him a good life. There's nothing we can do. I'm afraid your son's going to die.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't think that was the best bedside manner I'd ever heard.
Isn't it amazing that they really don't teach that?
It is amazing. It is amazing. Some people are very good at it, and some think that if they're just very honest that it's easier for the parents. I'm not so sure that's the case.
You know, there's got to be a happy medium in there somewhere. So I'm imagining with the fact that you can go online and sort of get a sense of things yourself, was there a point there while the doctors couldn't figure out what was going on where you were going online and going, okay, my son's falling over, these are the symptoms, what could it be?
Yeah, no, we did. We went on Google, as lots of people do now, and kind of tried to self-diagnose. And then we did. We were pretty sure we knew what it was. We were hopeful that it was a slightly milder version. But it's an awful thing to do in a lot of respects. If you sometimes, especially with fatal diseases and very, very serious illnesses, if you pop online and look for them, some of the horror stories you find are absolutely horrific. And we found those. And I'd rather I didn't, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, I bet. So you're looking online and you're actually seeing what it could be.
Yeah, we're seeing what it could be. We're seeing the outcome of a another disease. In our opinion, we thought it was Duchenne. There was a slightly less prevalent version called Becker's muscular dystrophy, which actually is not as bad and has a much better life expectancy.
Now, did you figure it out before the doctors did?
We had a good idea, and we're just very hopeful that it wasn't what we thought.
So when you get that diagnosis and you're told, okay, take your son home and enjoy whatever life however long his life is going to be, did you huddle up with your wife and decide, okay, this is what we need to do?
Yeah, we spent a little bit of time together just trying to get our heads around it. You know, life changed overnight.
Yeah.
From what we thought was our normal life, we suddenly had this new normal, as we call it, that was completely different. So we spent probably the best part of 6 months kind of coming to terms with it, having a look at the arena of Duchenne and what was out there, and who was doing what and where the research was. And then decided to start our own foundation to try and make a massive difference.
The hard part is, I remember when John Blaze was diagnosed with ALS, and I talked to a number of folks about the problem with these diseases where they move so quickly that the patient doesn't live long enough for them to do research on. And that was one of the things you hear on ALS is, gosh, we have a hard time finding a cure. Because, one, the population isn't big enough for the pharmaceutical companies to care. And at the same time, the prognosis, that they go so quickly that it's hard to study someone over a period of time. What did you find out in terms of what research was being done and what breakthroughs possibly they'd had on Duchenne?
Well, so when we started looking, there wasn't an awful lot of research happening. There were four or five clinical trials happening, that would help in a very small way. And just like with ALS, with Duchenne, it's a small population in the rare disease space. And Duchenne has lots of different mutations, and a lot of the treatments that people are looking at now and that the researchers are working on are mutation specific. So then you look at a population that is now being halved or quartered or just almost 15% potentially of those disease of those patients that could benefit from one piece of research. So, you know, we felt, and certainly with Harrison having he's got a bit of a rare mutation. So a rare mutation of a rare disease, which
ideal.
That we needed to try and focus on research that would help all boys, not just a specific proportion of the population.
Now, what have they told you? Okay, the life expectancy is X.
Yeah. So, yeah, the life expectancy at the moment, we've been told, is anywhere from late teens up to mid-20s. But that being said, you know, I hear of boys with Duchenne dying almost at least every week, if not every day, even as young as 12, 13 years old, which, you know, is horrifying when I think to myself, Harrison's just about to turn 9.
How painful is it for Harrison on a daily basis? I watched him over at Challenge Denmark last week, just walking around, and it doesn't look comfortable.
Yeah, he says that he's not in kind of everyday pain.
Yeah.
He says his muscles get sore if he works too hard, if he walks too long. The way it's affected his muscles, and they're kind of wasting away, and the muscle fibers are being replaced by calcium and by fibrosis and stuff. So he has to work extra hard to do just the simple things. So I think walking becoming harder for him. It's harder to stay on his feet, harder to stay balanced. But he fights on like a trooper. He really does.
He really does. And what does he know in terms of, prognosis?
He's very naive to it at the moment.
Good.
We've kind of kept it that way. So he knows he's got Duchenne. He doesn't understand the prognosis of that for life expectancy, etc. But he does understand that he's got poorly muscles, as he calls it.
Right. How does that, in terms of school, in terms of other kids playing sports, that must be really tough for him?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's one of those things as a dad, you want your kids to enjoy playing sport.
Right.
Being outside, being part of a team. And that's really difficult for him. You can't take part in team games in the traditional sense. So you can't do a soccer match because he can't really run.
Right.
And he can't get up off the floor quickly or bend down quickly. So we have to try and kind of design games that he can still feel like he's taking part. And that was, for me, the reason why I did the Ironman. I wanted him to feel that, kind of be part of a team and do something sporting that was massive, that would give him loads and loads of pride.
Did this start in terms of the idea of doing an Ironman? You weren't, when all this is going on in the last 4 years, when did you become a triathlete? Because obviously to do what you just did, where you and Harrison did Challenge Denmark together, full 2.4, 112, and 26.2, you weren't a triathlete to begin with.
No. I mean, I was a very keen tennis player when I was younger. I played a lot of that. But that kind of went by the wayside when I got to school and university and stuff and just enjoyed myself and then kind of continued enjoying myself until Harrison was diagnosed.
Yeah. So at that point, you became a triathlete.
Yeah. I suppose the first time I became a triathlete was two and a half years ago. I started training for what was then Challenge Barcelona in January 2013.
And is
not
that
long.
And after you finished that, from you getting into triathlon to the point of deciding that you're going to do it with Harrison, there must have been a Dick and Rick Hoyt video sighting.
There was. As soon as I started looking at doing Ironman and having set myself that target of being an Ironman athlete, you look online to find out what's what. And,
yeah.
If you put in Ironman and inspiration and that kind of stuff into Google, Dick Hoyt is the one that comes up.
Exactly, yeah.
And his video, the Yes I Can video, was just something else. And I saw that and thought, that's a dad doing what I would like to be able to do. And if I can emulate what he's done in any way, shape, or form, then I'll have done something special for Harrison. So it's almost straight away, as soon as I started training for the first one, that was the goal.
And you changed your health, you changed your body through the sport.
I did, yeah. I went from a 17 stone, so 260 pounds.
Yeah, you basically lost about 60 pounds.
Yeah, good part of 60 pounds, and still going. You know,
yeah,
still got something to do.
So you had done a couple Ironmans, and but Harrison hadn't been a partner with you in any of them,
or
even a short race at that point. And I look, as we talk about, you're not a guy who likes diving into the shallow end of the pool. You you go into the deep end. So deep end is, hey, I got an idea. We're going to go do Challenge Denmark full iron distance event. And Harrison and I are going to do it together. And this will be Harrison's first triathlon. And we'll just go out there and, you know, spend some quality time together. When did that thought enter your mind, and what was your wife's thought when you said, hey, I got an idea, I'll put Harrison out there and we'll be, you know, we'll basically be in the elements for anywhere from 15 hours to 17 hours?
Well, I mean, in all honesty, as soon as I saw the Dick Hoyt video, I said to my wife, I'm going to do that with Harrison. And her instant reaction was, that's just a really stupid idea, Alex.
But she's probably, you've probably heard that, I imagine you've heard that a few different times.
I have. The worrying thing is when you hear it from, like, good Ironman athletes, you hear it from them, they're saying, Alex, that is just, that's almost impossible. Dick is superhuman.
Yeah, he is, by the way.
Do you really think that you are capable of doing what Dick does?
Right. When you see Dick at the end of an Ironman race running a sub-4-hour marathon pushing his son, you're going, okay. And I figured out at one point, with the bike that he was riding when he had Dick, or when he had Rick on the handlebars, he was carrying like an extra 200 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just ridiculous.
Exactly.
Coming up with equipment, coming up with, okay, we're going to, because you're using a catamaran type of float. Talk a little bit about the swim, figuring out swim, bike, and run, what was going to work for you.
Well, I mean, I looked at what Dick had done in the past, and I didn't think that he was perhaps giving himself the best opportunity for some of them. You know, the buggy, I mean, not the buggy, the dinghy that he was using.
Yes,
you know,
that's gigantic.
It's huge. It's flat in the water. You know, it has big drag. It doesn't track straight behind when you're swimming.
Right.
And I'm very lucky to have a family that, an extended family of mine that own a marina and a boatyard down on the south coast of England. And they have a master boat builder down there, and I pop down to see him. And they're like, this is what I'm trying to do. Do you have any experience of someone swimming in front of a boat? And he's like, Alex, people don't swim in front of boats. But if we were going to do it, then perhaps a catamaran would be the best way to go. It would be heavier with dry weight than a dinghy will be, but in the water it will track straight and it will track true and it will have a low draft and a low drag. So let's give that a go. And I went down to test it about 9 months ago now, and I honestly felt like I wasn't dragging anything. It was such a bizarre experience. Had to keep turning around to look behind to make sure I was attached.
Wow.
You knew there was weight there, but there was no, you're expecting a drag, you know, expecting a pull, something that's, you know, no
sure,
rather than just a nice, even weight. So I thought that worked really, really well. I still can't decide whether I'm right or wrong with a trailer behind as opposed to having Harrison on the front of the bike. I'm not sure. My opinion of it was it meant that I could go aero,
right,
and that I could break some wind and hopefully break the wind around the trailer as much as possible. And it would certainly be more comfortable for him.
Well, and also you're keeping him out of the sun. All right, you can play with his iPad.
Exactly. Which he did.
Eat lunch, play games. And that's great. And then the I like is the buggy you use for the bike, you basically convert it quickly for the run.
Yeah, it just has a simple attachment that goes into the rear axle of the bike. and you just take that off, attach two small wheels at the front, and then away you go. So it's one piece of kit for both.
I love that.
And it's light. I had a really great company up in Norfolk, in the north of England, who took out most of the metal from the frame and replaced it with carbon fiber. He got a racing seat molded to his shape out of foam. And then they extended it to make sure it was long enough for his frame, because it was actually designed, the buggy itself was designed for two small kids rather than one larger boy.
So did you do much testing with Harrison in there?
We did a bit, but it was, not half enough.
I was going to say.
Not half enough. We were going into real unknown territory.
Wow.
Out on the race course.
So, okay, so last weekend was the race at Challenge Denmark out by Legoland. And obviously, you're not hiding when you're out there and you're pulling your son. And so you're going to be in the spotlight. You had BBC there. You've got your own documentary crew.
Yeah.
That's a lot of pressure. And I've seen that at Ironman when we're following certain people and you see them crumble because it's a lot of pressure. It's like one thing to say, I'm going to do this. It's another to do it in front of, but somebody is watching you at your deepest, darkest level, right? They're seeing you potentially crumble. And you probably knew that going in, but take us through the day itself. The swim go pretty well. I remember Dick Hoyt telling me that he always thought someone was hanging on to his boat, that he was pulling half the field through the swim.
Yeah, no. So the swim was brilliant. I remember standing at the side of the swim start with the three guys with me with the boat up in the air. And looking back at the boat and thinking, crikey, that looks bigger than last time I looked. and then all the crowds were there as we got into the water for the first time, and everybody was cheering for us. You can tell they're really cheering. Oh, my God, look at him. What's he doing?
Right.
And Harrison waving. And we set off swimming, and it just started to feel good.
Yeah.
It really did. It's obviously, it's a long way, 3.8K, 2.4 miles. But it was smooth. I had a really great swimmer in front of me who sighted for me, so I just sighted him.
Yes.
I did get told that there were people drafting the back of the boat.
I'm sure there were. Yeah, you're breaking a lot of water, man. That's great.
Like cheeky sods on the back of my boat.
Who's sitting on the back of a boat? That's got to be, I drafted on this boat.
I know. But it went really, really well. We came round to the Australian exit at, I think it was, 48 minutes or 52 minutes, something like that. And then negative split the second half.
Nice.
And it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I could hear Harrison in the background. I could hear my family on the side, particularly my youngest son banging the noise.
Yep, yep.
Doing the cowbells, trying to give him a little wave from time to time.
That's cool.
And it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
So you get on the bike, and I think it was about, I think one of your support guys was saying about 60 miles in, it seemed like things started to come apart a little bit for you.
It was about 70 miles in the end.
Yeah.
We'd got through the first half really well, and I think we'd done 3.5 hours for the first 90K into the wind.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised how well it was going. I felt strong with Harrison on the back, bearing in mind we hadn't done an awful lot, to be honest, together.
Right.
With the full weight. And then the two 45K loops that they had were a little bit more undulating. There was a lot into the wind. And, the wheels started to come off, so to speak. It was just hard, hard work.
Yeah.
Really, really hard work. And my legs were starting to hurt.
What a surprise that is.
Yeah, I know. And then we had the pleasure of 6 miles out, shearing off the pedal out of the crankshaft.
So your pedal basically comes off.
Yeah, we completely de-threaded the inside of the crank.
Wow. And what do you do?
Panic. Christ, is my day done here? This is not fair. God.
Yeah.
Really lucky to have the team with me. So I basically stole one of their bikes, reattached the buggy to the new bike.
Yep.
And the poor guy did 6 miles back on one pedal.
Yeah, that's okay. He can handle 6 miles. That's not a big deal.
Exactly.
And then when you finished that bike, you must have been totally worn out.
Yeah, I was pretty spent. There's a picture of me just sitting down, and I looked like I'm done.
Right.
And the guys I was with sat down with me and spoke to me and was like, Alex, you know, you look like a walker right now. And if you walk, we're talking about being out here for another 7 hours. So you need to muster something up, you need to find something, and you need to run.
Right.
And we did. I know. I thought about Harrison. I thought about not completing. I thought about all, you know, all the things that I've said I'm going to do. And, you know, like you say, I jump in the deep end. And if I'm going to jump, I like to make sure I get the jump done. I'm not very good at failure. So I mustered something up. And I really hoped in the run that my legs would come back to me like they normally do. And I'd be able to start running better and faster. But they never did. I was pretty much on the wall from the beginning. And it was a full-on mental kind of challenge to myself to make myself continue to run when I didn't really have anything left to do so.
And the other side of it starts to rain. It's cold out there. And poor Harrison is sitting back there shivering.
That's right. Yeah, it did. It started to rain really hard. And for the first, I suppose, about 2.5 hours at the beginning of the marathon. And, yeah, he was getting cold, he was getting wet. It was really difficult to try and keep him dry.
Yeah.
So we had to stop to get him dry again. You know, at this point, I'm really struggling because I'm very tired. I'm still trying to be dad as well and, you know, reassure him that everything's going to be okay.
But you're not quite sure it is.
Yeah, I'm not sure it is because I'm going into uncharted territory.
Yeah.
And he had a really big wobble, and, you know, he wanted to stop. And it took a monumental effort from all of us to get him dry, pray for some sun and no more rain. And thankfully, we got a period of about an hour and a half of no rain. And his spirits soared, and all of our spirits soared, and we got him back and got him excited about getting to the finish line again and getting himself a medal.
The cool thing about that course being four loops, you know, you won, you're going back past the start-finish line, you got people to cheer, I'm sure family can see you.
Yeah.
But you also have, wasn't there like a dirt part of that little run each time? Now it's muddy, it's slow, it's quicksand.
Oh, it was a nemesis, absolute nemesis. First time we got to it on the first lap,
yeah,
we saw it and I started running through it, and suddenly you're trying twice as hard, twice as much effort into just keeping going. And then to know that you're coming back there every
three
hour,
more times,
three more times was very, very difficult. And the last lap itself, going through there, it was kind of a joy because you know you're never going to have to take each step ever again.
Right.
But also kind of the hardest 1.2K of my life, I think.
So coming across the finish line, and did you have beforehand, did you think, okay, this is the time I want to do, or did you even care?
I'd set myself a target before I started.
Okay.
I wanted to go as fast as Dick had gone. I wanted to do 30 and 40.
Yeah.
Tough.
that might have been a little too deep.
Well, you know, I looked at the separate elements of it.
And right.
I felt that I could do the separate elements. I just didn't know whether I could put them all together.
Right.
On one day.
Yeah.
And whether the weather and the machinery would help me on the day. You know, in iron distance racing, you're very lucky if you have a perfect day. But I thought, you know, I thought I could get a swim done in an hour and 35 minutes, and I was pretty much on that. I thought I could get the bike done in 7 hours, and I was on that for halfway.
Yep.
And then it all, you know, the wheels came off, so to speak. And then I just had to try and do the marathon, and I know I'm a sub-4-hour marathon runner, and I know I've done halves with Harrison where I'm sub-2, so I thought to myself, you know, there's a chance.
Sure.
There's a chance. If I can give myself 4.5 hours on the marathon, I've got a chance of getting there.
Right.
But from about 3/4 of the way into the bike, I knew that wasn't on anymore. And then it was all about just having as good a time as we could.
Right.
And then making sure we got to the end.
Make sure you finish under 17 hours.
Yeah. Well, 16, yeah, I think it's 16 at Challenge.
16 at Challenge, yeah. And what did you guys end up in?
We were 15:35.
Wow. Nothing wrong with that. Huge crowds at the finish. You've got your, you know, like your documentary crew, you got the BBC folks. Knowing that you're going to make it, right? You're you know, a couple hundred yards out, you're heading towards that finish line. What was going through your head?
A couple hundred yards out, I started to cry, actually. I was very emotional. And I was leaning over the top of the buggy saying to Harrison, "We did it, buddy, we did it. We're going to make it." Him saying, "Yeah, Daddy, let's get to that finish line.
Let's get out of here. I'd like a warm meal and get out of this stupid buggy."
And I really wanted to come around that last corner and manage a sprint finish, but
it
wasn't working for me that day.
What did Harrison think about getting his medal?
Oh, he loved it, and it was amazing to get it from one of the pro athletes as well. That was just very cool, and you could see from his face he had a huge smile and a huge smile on it, and he's very proud of himself.
So what's next? You go off and do something like that. You went big to start out. So what, will you be doing more of these?
I do think so. I mean, I've got myself into a position where I'm quite fit now, and I've got a hell of an engine. Not going to be that fast yet, but I've got an engine. So, personally, I want to go and really smash an Ironman somewhere. And so I'm going back to the first one I ever did in Barcelona and see how fast I can get that one done. That's in October this year. And then I'd like to do some more races with Harrison. And whether that be half marathons, marathons, Ironman, half Ironman, we'd like to do them all. I mean, the biggest battle is actually not so much getting Harrison to help me or Harrison to come along and do it, which he's kind of keen to do once he's got over this one.
You're right.
Is actually getting the entry. You know, Challenge Denmark were amazing. They said yes straight away. We'd love to have you. But it's not always easy to get into these races.
That's true. That is true. And so you established harrisonsfund.org. I'm imagining, obviously, one of the reasons you're doing this is to create awareness for Duchenne and to create fundraising so that the next parents have some hope.
That's correct. Absolutely right. So, we're all about medical research. And we're funding 13 or 14 different Duchenne projects at the moment. Nearly all of them are based on stuff that's going to help all boys, so... You know, it is not specific to a mutation.
Right.
But we need to raise millions and millions of pounds. We're a small charity with an incredibly big goal. And if we can muster the support of many, many people, then we have a really good chance of making sure that Harrison's generation of kids won't be the last generation to die. They'll be the first to survive.
Was there a lot of media in England when you got home?
There was, and we've done a couple of national radio interviews. And on Wednesday evening, we're on it's called BBC The One Show.
I know BBC One.
It's their highlight show on a seven p.m. on an evening.
Wow,
which was absolutely amazing. Live broadcast with the family, and they showed the videos of what they'd filmed over the weekend. Very emotional night, but the donations started rolling in, and we made the best part of $35,000 in 24 hours.
Did you really? That's cool. Yeah. That is great.
Yeah, so it was a very good night. A very good night.
Now there was a soundbite in a previous interview where you said, "I wish my son was a dog," and obviously that created a lot of buzz.
Yeah.
But it was based on the fact that I think there had been a facility for dogs that had burned down, and then immediately people raised about £2 million.
That's right.
For these to rebuild the facility and to take care of these animals. And as a dad whose son has a disease that is at this point fatal, that sort of struck you a little strange.
It did. You know, I was really proud of my nation and the people who live here for acting so positively and so quickly and so aggressively to help the dogs that were affected.
Right.
But I was also really, I was struggling with the fact that people would choose to do that without thinking about all the children out there that are having an awfully hard time, and specifically for us with Duchenne. So I wanted to try and question how and why people make those donations. And we're quite honest and brazen in our kind of our advertising strategies, where we do push buttons.
Yes.
I think as a small charity, and if you're going to try and advertise in a big way, then you need to do something slightly different to rise above the rest of the stuff that's on the page. So it needs to stand out, which is where that one came from. I just wanted people to think about where they give their money, why they give their money, and to think about their choices. And there are more choices out there than just donating because you see a nice picture of a dog.
It's, with Father's Day, Dick and Rick Hoyt are always, one of the reasons Iron Man has become what it has become and the sport has become what it has become is the universal stories of what a father will do for a son, as example. And the fact that Father's Day is on Sunday, and you just had this amazing experience with your son Harrison. I just love that link. This is a small sport with a big heart. This is a sport that gives back. Obviously, through Challenge Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $65 million now to help people stay in a game of life through sport. What's your ultimate goal? What do you want to see happen from the fact that you and Harrison spent 15 and a half quality hours together, basically changing perceptions about what somebody can do with and for their son?
Well, I suppose a number of things. I mean, I really wanted to just have an incredible day with him, which we did. So that's amazing. But if we can inspire people to do challenges, to get off the sofa and actually go out and test themselves a little bit, and perhaps do it with their families, then I think we've been really successful. The ultimate goal for myself with all of these things is to one day make myself redundant, because I'm a charity CEO. That's what I do, but I don't want to do it. I want to be made redundant and go back to being just a dad. I'll be the happiest redundant dad there is if we get to that. Then we get to that point that Harrison is no longer has the prognosis of dying. If we can get to a point where he's got the prognosis of having a lifetime that I can spend with him, as opposed to a shortened one that I've got now, then that'll be amazing. It's really important to me, and trying to save his life is the most important thing. And to that end, I'm in Washington D.C. right now, and I'll still be here on Sunday on Father's Day. So I'll be away from the boys for Father's Day, that might be the same for 5, 6, 7 years to come. But if it means that I've got 40 odd Father's Days after that with him, then these 5 or 6 are definitely worth it.
Well, on the Father's Day, you had an early Father's Day.
We had an early Father's Day, yes.
Just being able to celebrate Harrison and your relationship with him, and no texts, no emails, no calls. You guys were locked in for 15 and a half hours.
Yeah.
I love that.
Amazing. So cool.
Alex, such a pleasure to get to meet you over at Challenge Denmark last week. It's an honor. There's a lot of people who are out there, doing the right stuff, and you were one of them. Being a dad and just basically saying, okay, I've been dealt a bad hand here. We've been dealt a bad hand here, but we can make an impact. We're not going to sit powerless on the sideline when we can get out there and make a difference in Harrison's life and in the next family that deals with this.
Absolutely. You get dealt cards in life, don't you? And these are the cards we've been dealt, so these are the cards we play with.
Love it. Alex, thank you so much. Have a great Father's Day when you get back to see the boys.
And you, Bob.
All right. Alex Smith has been our guest. Again, it's harrisonsfund.org. Please donate. It's what Alex is doing is simply amazing. Watching him at Challenge Denmark last week was spectacular. It was definitely the highlight of the weekend. We are brought to you by RacePlace.com, Ceramic Speed, RunCatalina.com. Check out all of our interviews on Babbittville. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.